Brian.
Obamacare doesn't work. Higher premiums and fewer choices and restricted access, these are not signs of success.
The bill also...
USA Radio News with Susan King.
You know, I'm comfortable explaining him these issues and how he has to be tolerant.
What's on the birth certificate is on the birth certificate, and that's, like, well, honestly, it's... I don't, you know, it's abomination.
Man on the street reaction today to that federal directive from the Obama administration ordering schools to allow students to use the bathroom of the gender they identify with, not necessarily the gender on their birth certificate. The TSA acting on a new plan to minimize wait times at the nation's airports. Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson says there is a 10-point plan that's being put into action immediately.
Our task is to keep passengers moving, but to also, and most importantly, keep passengers safe.
This is USA Radio News.
Hello, I'm Tirza, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is Hillsdale President Larry Arnn on the basis of the rights our founders fought for in the Revolution and secured in the Constitution.
The American Republic's meaning and proper method of operation is to be found in two documents, in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. That's about 5,000 words of text. That's not very much. They're simple, they're beautiful, they can be understood and be retained. A human being is a certain kind of thing and requires to be treated in a certain way. A human being is a thing that has rights, and those rights are inalienable according to the Declaration. You've got to respect them. And it also follows that given the kind of thing a human being is, government needs to be organized in certain ways. And I think that that is the argument of the American Revolution.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket Constitution and Declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Confusion at the Environmental Protection Agency apparently delayed the agency's response to the Flint, Michigan water crisis. The Detroit Free Press cites recently revealed email messages showing EPA regulators being notified as early as February of 2015 of lead contamination in the city's water supply. But later emails show conflicting views about the scope of the problem and the number of residents affected. Over 5,000 pages of emails and documents released to the paper and other media outlets regarding the EPA response. The Navy commander of the ship that accidentally entered Iranian territorial waters in January is no longer in charge. Navy officials say Commander Eric Rosh has been relieved of his duties due to a loss of confidence in his ability to command. Rosh was in charge of the squadron that included 10 sailors who were briefly held captive after their ship strayed into Iranian waters. This is USA Radio News.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Pollution in the Gulf of Mexico, the waters off the coast of Louisiana, are the site of a crude oil spill. We get the story from USA's Anthony Lucero.
Shell Oil says an estimated 2,100 barrels of oil have spilled into the Gulf of Mexico. The oil company says it's isolated the location of the leak and shut in production at the site. Shell says the leak was discovered when a company helicopter spotted an oil sheen. The Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement says the location of the sheen is about 100 miles off the coast of Louisiana. I'm Anthony Lucero.
Governor Jerry Brown today proposing a $122 billion spending plan for California. That's down slightly from his January proposal after he projected tax revenues falling nearly $2 billion below expectations and a deficit when voter-approved sales and income taxes began to expire. Tax collections have slowed since January when Brown proposed the budget for the next fiscal year, which begins in July. By law, about half of the state spending goes to K-12 and higher education.
The yeas are 400, the nays are 5. The bill is passed.
A series of bills aimed at curbing opioid and heroin addiction now heads to the Senate. After final passage in the House today, opioids are prescription painkillers. Their abuse often leads users to heroin. The White House is asking Congress for more than $1 billion in new funding for treatment. This is USA Radio News. I'm Susan King.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Good afternoon. Friday the 13th for all of you who are superstitious. You've made it almost through the day. So my name is Pat Smits, and I'm going to give you your weather for today, which, as you know, if you've been outside, we're looking outside, it's not fun. More rain. We have an 80% chance of showers today, which, of course, I guess we should say 100% because, in fact, it is raining. And high today may be around 56 to 60 degrees. Tonight, again, a 30% chance of showers and then a patchy fog. Now, there's also hazardous weather conditions posted. I'm not sure exactly what that means because so far it's just been showers this afternoon and a chance of showers tonight and then partly foggy after 3 a.m. And of course, we all know in Hunterdon County, when it's foggy, you have to be very, very careful because somehow the animals seem to like walking across the roads during the fog. Tomorrow, again, a chance of showers. And in fact, that tomorrow, there are also a chance of thunderstorms tomorrow after noon, then showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 5 p.m. Now, Saturday night, again, what can I tell you? Showers likely, about 60% chance of rain. And then what's happening on Sunday? Let me take a look. I think Sunday actually is supposed to be at least a slight chance of showers in the morning. Then it's supposed to get, cloudy, partially sunny. Some forecasts are actually saying it should be sunny in the afternoon, high of about 60 degrees, and into Monday. Monday is supposed to be our nice day of the extended weekend, sunny and high of about 62 degrees. And again, we could have some clouds and more rain by Tuesday. So not a great weekend, and certainly it hasn't warmed up the way we would hope it would by the middle of May. And, of course, as I said, May 13th, and we'll be right back with the rest of the program after I tell you who is, well, let's take a couple breaks.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm a CPA with the accounting firm of Bedard Kowicki & Company. And I joined the Chamber to interact with new Chamber members and expand our mutual needs for business networking and giving back to the Hunterdon business community.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Good afternoon. I'm here to tell you about the law now that I told you about the bad weather. So, you know, do whatever you have to do inside to try to get out perhaps on Sunday. Sounds like it's going to be the best day. So I'm Pat Smits. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County, and I talk to you about legal issues. And if you tuned in last week to my program, you know that I interviewed Dave Watts, the author of Accidental PI, a private investigator's 50-year search for the facts. I think it was really an interesting exchange. I know that I read the book cover to cover. I was going to skim it because I had to interview Dave, and of course I sat there and I read the entire book. Reads like a novel, and I certainly recommend it. Anyone who has any knowledge about Plainfield will see things in there that they recognize. Hunterdon County the same way. I certainly recognize the names of a number of judges and, a number of attorneys and even some judges. So, in any event, let's talk a little bit about what's happening this week in the law. I will have Dave on my program again as a guest. But for right now, what's happening? Well, I hope I brought everything I wanted to talk to you about. One thing that people have to be careful in the way they handle things, because there was a mistrial called. The appellate division granted an emergent application for a mistrial in a legal malpractice case after the trial judge said that one of the attorneys in the case could testify as a fact witness. So that, in other words, there was a dual role because the attorney was going to be able to continue to represent her client and actually testify as a fact witness. Absolutely no-no. So one of the issues that people have brought up in New Jersey is whether or not someone who's been accused of drunk driving would be entitled to a jury trial because, despite the threat of up to 6 months jail time and thousands of dollars in fines and penalties, what the Supreme Court in New Jersey held is that defendants facing repeat drunk driving offenses are not entitled to jury trials. And this was a divided New Jersey Supreme Court ruled on this on Wednesday. And I will bring more information in on that case. I didn't have an opportunity to print out the decision. But that means that you could end up in jail for 6 months with no right to a jury trial if it's based on drunk driving, because in New Jersey, our drunk driving statutes are very different than they are in a number of other states. Now, the federal judge has denied a new trial for the ex-Capital One analyst who was hit with nearly $13.5 million in fines earlier this year. So, no new trial. As far as things approved for publication, there was a contract case, and this is in the estate of Balk, and it was this was a trial court, and it is published and approved for publication. And in that case, the terms of a promissory note entered into as a settlement between the parties required an initial payment and four installment payments be made at specific times. And thereafter, $37,000 towards an $800,000 note was paid. However, he failed to pay the initial sum or make the installment payments in full. So there was a promise when the promisee moved to enforce the settlement agreement and entered judgment. The trial court concluded that New Jersey's 6-year statute of limitations was applicable, contrary to the 4-year statute in Pennsylvania, and that was based on choice of law. I understand it's a little convoluted, but in this case, the appellate court said that the that was not a trial court decision. That was the appeal from the trial court decision in the state of Balk. And the appellate division found that the trial judge correctly applied the installment method. And there, under this approach, and this is something that if you're paying installments or collecting on installments, you need to know. Apparently, under this statute that they were using, the new statute of limitations begins to run against each installment when it becomes due. So in that case, the promisee is entitled to all payments which became due on or after a certain date. And so that was, you know, if anybody is dealing with installment contracts, they need to read and talk to an attorney that deals with this type of law. Frankly, not me. But the criminal law case that I'll talk a little bit more about next week when I get the opinion is this was a case, State v. Denzel Beck. And and even though third or subsequent DWI offenders who face jail time, they are not entitled to a jury trial because, and in fact, in this case, the fact that the defendant's conviction was by a bench trial did not violate his Sixth Amendment right to a jury. So this is, you know, this is very significant because in most cases, if you're faced with any kind of criminal charges, other than a disorderly person's offense, you, in fact, are entitled to a jury. Then, well, there was another case that the headlines are Domino's delivery drivers sue over their piece of the pie. And apparently an operator of 26 Domino pizza franchises is accused in a federal lawsuit of paying delivery drivers at an unlawfully low rate. And this is in violation of the Fair Labor Standards Act and the New Jersey minimum wage law. So apparently Domino's was basically saying to these guys, drive and collect whatever tips you can get. There was a federal judge has awarded $1.5 million to a law firm representing plaintiffs in the diet drug class action suit, as well as the multi-district litigation in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania. So they certainly won big in that case. And the interesting thing is always in these cases is how much the actual plaintiffs get. I recently received a check for 32 cents. Apparently, I was somehow involved in some kind of a class action, and I was somebody who was protected, and so much for getting back as much as they paid in postage. But in another case that the Judge Cuff is the appellate judge who's been sitting on the Supreme Court based on the fact that Governor Christie, well, it's now resolved, but she's been sitting on the Supreme Court as a fill-in. So she wrote the opinion in State v. Willis, and the basic issue was the relevance of an alleged sexual assault 3 years before the defendant's encounter with another person was so marginal that it should have been excluded. And the justices found that, moreover, the erroneous admission of this evidence cannot be considered harmless as the quality and quantity of the evidence introduced to inform the jury of the defendant's intent in April 2006 overwhelmed the state's case in chief. So it, based on that, the relevance, they did not allow this evidence that obviously the Supreme Court said it should have been excluded. And as a result of that, there will be the ability to get a new trial in that case. Now, actually, interestingly, the judge hearing the criminal case of Bridgewater defendants William Barone Jr. and Bridget Ann Kelly has granted a request by media organizations to disclose the names of unindicted co-conspirators in the alleged lane closure. If you'll recall, this had to do with the closure of lanes leading to the bridge in Bergen County because of you know, trying to get political payback. And so this has been going on, and I wonder how much we, the taxpayers of the state of New Jersey, have had to shell out for the state to defend some of these people that did this. And always the issue has been whether or not what, if anything, the governor knew about the closures. And, you know, he's pretty much been, you know, depending on whether you like him or not, he's been accused of knowing this because he would never allow, or his people would never have gone ahead without giving him the heads up. So in any event, I guess most people would say it's time to get it behind us. So there was a defense, in another case, a defense expert's apparent error while comparing two MRIs during deposition testimony played at trial that was not detected, or at least not pointed out at the time, was no basis to order a new trial, leading to a $250,000 jury award, according to the appellate division. So that case would be of interest to some people on either side of that type of an issue. The New Jersey Supreme Court, however, is set to determine whether a state police detective can be held liable for violating a woman's constitutional rights after he and other troopers entered her home against her will and stayed there for several hours while waiting to obtain a search warrant. So in other words, he entered the house without a warrant. She didn't want him there. And they waited for several hours to obtain the search warrant. Now, obviously, I'm sure that the police officers thought the warrant was on its way, and their justification would be that if they had to wait outside during that period of time, the woman could easily have gotten rid of anything that they were trying to search for. But can't do it. They should have waited until they had the warrant, and certainly acted prematurely. Now, if it had been a few minutes, would there have been the same concern? Very possibly not. Now, actually, there's a question of whether or not a university has to actually somehow waive certain regulations to ease the and make it easier to accommodate a student with bipolar disorder. So as far as Rutgers University Medical School, a federal judge in Newark has ruled that the medical school had no obligation to waive its time limit for graduation or to ease its testing standards in order to accommodate a student with a bipolar disorder. So that very often, for example, students with disabilities are given either additional time and modified testing standards. And we can certainly recognize that perhaps that someone who is deaf or blind, you know, they may need certain accommodations in order to take the test to make it a level playing field. But in this case, the medical school had no obligation to waive its time limit for graduation. In other words, in many schools, there is a time limit to graduate. In other words, you can't take one course a semester for 20 years. Other schools don't care, but most or many schools, especially professional schools, you have to go through the process and take the test within a certain period of time. So, a couple things about Americans with Disabilities Act, but that I don't think, frankly, it'll be of much general interest. So let's see if there's anything else. There is anybody with health club memberships might be interested because a broad waiver of liability in a health club's membership contract is not sufficient to sustain a claim under New Jersey's Truth and Consumer Contract and Warranty Notice Act, and that a Superior Court judge in Camden ruled that. And there was an attorney who was disqualified, and in fact, an appellate court issued a stern warning to attorneys who might be tempted to find other uses for confidential discovery. And in this case, the judge said, this can get you kicked off the case. In other words, if, in fact, an attorney obtains discovery that's confidential in one case, they can't just go and use it in another case. And that's not unusual to happen if attorneys represent the same type of plaintiffs or defendants, and they could easily have something in one case that really would be very significant in another case that they have, but it's labeled confidential. It's labeled confidential, so they can't just go and use it. Now, I think they could. There are different ways that they could request this information, but they just can't use it. Now, the New Jersey Supreme Court has declined to hear a first impression case over whether a father who had little contact with his now deceased son for the last 9 years of the child's life should be found to have abandoned him and consequently be barred from seeking a portion of his estate. Interesting case. I don't know the name of the and I don't think the appellate decision was appealed, but I will find that out, because the question is, in this case, it could sound like, well, you can walk out of your kid's life for 9 years, and then if for some reason the child is deceased and perhaps a medical malpractice case or some other personal injury case, and the based on the deceased child, there's going to be a lot of money. Can this parent who has had no contact with the child just be able to say, hey, I'm back here for my share? So, because in many of these cases, obviously, the estate could be pretty significant. Well, I'm going to play some brief news, and then we'll be back with the rest of the program.
A decree from President Obama will affect school children all across the country. USA's Anthony Lucero has the story.
The Obama administration will order public schools across the country to allow transgender students to use the bathroom of their choice. The New York Times reports that the Justice Department and the Department of Education will send a letter to school districts today explaining that children who identify as transgender will be allowed to use the bathroom that matches their gender identity. The newspaper also says the letter contains an implicit threat that schools could lose funding if they don't comply. I'm Anthony Lucero.
Retail sales figures are a lot better than industry analysts expected. Figures out today from the Commerce Department show retail sales jumped 1.3% in April. That's nearly 0.5% higher than experts were forecasting. This is USA Radio News.
Hello, I'm Eric, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is Hillsdale President Larry Arne on progressivism's appeal and danger.
Progressivism has been powerful for two kinds of reasons. First of all, its promise is a very high promise. It claims that it can put everything right. And the second thing is, it draws on modern science for a lot of its authority, and modern science is very powerful. Modern science cured polio. Modern science put a man on the moon. The question is, what do you do with the power? If you give absolute power or excessive power to a bunch of people, over time, they're very likely to abuse it. Remember, the richest country in the history of man in peacetime has assembled a debt larger than any in history. And it is getting to the place now where it's not going to be able to afford to go on.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Well, we're back. The program is It's the Law. I'm Pat Smits. Those of you who know me know that I'm a family lawyer. I handle divorce, custody, premarital agreements, etc. But I try to bring some news as far as current news with respect to legal issues, legal cases, statutes, and anyone who's interested in anything can always contact my office, and I'm certainly more than interested in hearing from my listeners to put on information that you're interested in. But in ordinarily, I talk about cases that are approved for publication and sometimes cases that are not approved for publication. The difference between the two is that the cases that are approved for publication can be used as precedent. So an attorney can certainly use any of those cases as precedent. We are able, to some extent, to use cases on point that are not approved for publication. However, the caveat is we have to provide all cases that we know about on that subject. And, of course, generally, most of us don't read every single case and keep track of every single case, so it makes it very difficult to use cases that are not approved for publication. And so that there was a case that is interesting, not published, but I think it is interesting from the standpoint of what happens when someone is underemployed or unemployed. And in this case, the case is Marino versus Marino. And the defendant in that case, the man, appealed from an order directing that he pay $134 per week in child support to the plaintiff. And a second order entered a few months later that was denying his motion for reconsideration of the earlier order. So that leads me to something that people often ask. What happens if a trial judge issues an order that you think is wrong? Well, if in fact it's the final order, you have a right to appeal. If it's not a final order, you don't have a right to appeal. You can ask an appellate court by filing a motion for leave to appeal. You can ask them to take a look, but it's rare that they do. Now, very often what people do is they will file a motion for reconsideration. So that's what happened in this case. There was a motion for reconsideration of the May order. And again, in August, that order denied the motion for reconsideration of the earlier order. So in this case, the appellate panel reversed and remanded to the trial court for further proceedings. Now, honestly, that's usually what happens in family cases if you win. In other words, the appellate division sends the case back to the same trial judge for a do-over. So what happened in this case, and why they also obviously often deny the appeal, which is one thing they can do, is just deny it outright. If, in fact, they find some reason, as I said, they usually will reverse what the trial court order said and then remand it to the trial court for further in proceedings, which basically means a do-over. Now, they can, but rarely in family matters do they take it upon themselves to make a decision rather than just remanding it to the trial court. And this is, of course, very frustrating to litigants because they say, wait a minute, now I have to go back before the same judge to deal with the same issues, and the outcome could be the same, and it often is the same. So in other words, the appellate case in this case found that the imputation of income to the mother, found that the imputation of income to the mother, who proffered no explanation why she was not working and earning at least the amount per year she had been earning at the time of the divorce, was appropriate. So in this case, the appellate division sent the case back to the family part and based on the fact that the trial judge had not found any basis for doing what he did. So I find that my good friend and colleague who had a birthday yesterday. Happy birthday,
John. Thank you very much, Pat.
He's come
It's nice
in.
To, you know, have my 39th yeah. once again.
Well, he's come in, and although we're a little early for the sports guys, I'm going to put him on the spot.
Okay, Pat.
Ask him if there have been any interesting estate cases recently.
Well, actually, there have been a lot of developments, and I promise you I'll come on the show sometime in the near future to do it. But the main thing that we're grappling with right now is tax situations that affect second marriages, same-sex marriages, and on the income tax side, you know, the new, you know, 3.8% Medicare tax on unearned income. I mean, these are all issues that directly impact the estate planning process, Pat. And what I'm finding now just in my own practice, as you know, it's I deal with, you know, many, many families, maybe 150 families a year. And a good number of them are blended families, and this is right in your area. You know exactly what that's all about. And the issues are, how do we treat our spouse appropriately and not ignore our children in the process of putting an estate plan together? This becomes even more difficult if the house is owned jointly, and a lot, and both sides have contributed substantially to the purchase of that new home. When a parent passes away, the surviving spouse is still in the house. So even if you have documents that say, well, when the second spouse passes away, then all the kids from both marriages will share in what's left. But what if that second spouse lives another 30 years and they stay in the house? There's
but
no
I think
inheritance.
There's even another problem. Because what prevents the second spouse from changing the will?
Well, no, we deal with that. That's very elementary. That's an excellent question. And for the point out there for our audience is that you must put a provision in the will or sign a separate agreement that says, when I pass away, my spouse can't change the will. I agree that if my spouse passes away, I won't change my will. So, yeah, you do have to have an agreement that's 3B1-4, very clear on its face.
Well, then let's go back a minute. Let's assume that the spouse, the people buy a house jointly. Tenants buy the entireties. That house, according to most of what we learned in law school, is then going to be owned exclusively by the surviving spouse. How can a will change that?
Well, basically, the will creates a fiduciary duty on the part of the surviving spouse. It's almost, you can think of it as a contract. I agree that if you die first, I won't change my will. And included within the scope of that agreement would be the house. You're very correct. It wouldn't just be jointly owned assets, which, of course, pass outside the will. You would have to expand that contract to include retirement plans. I have this all the time because the way the tax laws are written, Pat, there is such a strong incentive to name the surviving spouse as a designated beneficiary. And if you were to have, I mean, quite frequently, I gave you the house situation. Quite often, as you know, when divorcing spouses remarry, perhaps the only large asset they have left intact is their retirement plan. So let's say husband is an executive and has, you know, $1 million 401k, and he remarries, and he basically has no other assets because as part of the divorce, you know, he ceded over ownership in the house to the wife, etc.
Right.
So now he comes into the second marriage and really
let's
all he's got is this IRA.
Let's just that is very often what will happen. In other words, there are cases where someone wants to retain their retirement, especially if they're a little bit older, and so they may trade off, and I do this all the time, they may trade off the house that the wife wants because she may want to stay there with the kids or whatever, for either all of their retirement or certainly a bigger chunk of their retirement. So that's the situation you're now faced with. Now the guy wants to marry again. So how do you handle that?
Well, under federal law, ERISA, in a 401k, you must name the surviving spouse. as the beneficiary. So what could be done is, as in all of these cases, Pat, and I hear you preach about it literally every week when we're together, is that they need to have counseling before they go into that marriage. They need to see you before they enter in that marriage, not just for the prenup, but to get advice on these other very important financial issues. So you would include within the scope of the prenup, if not a separate agreement under 3B1-4, which is the probate statute, saying that we agree to name each other as primary beneficiaries on our retirement plans, but we agree that upon the death of the second spouse, the children of the original owner of that account, in this example, the husband's children, will be the contingent beneficiaries who will take when the spouse passes away.
Right. And in fact, that has to be a separate agreement after the parties are married. It can't even be part of...
Can't even be part of the prenup.
So, now, how many people, it seems to me that the people that I talk to, they're totally clueless about this.
Oh, yeah. This is a complex area, Pat. People have to understand. I mean, it's no different. I mean, I just came from Dr. Phillips' office. I have to have cataract surgery. It's an enormous amount of planning that goes into this. A lot of it isn't covered by expenses, by insurance. But I want Paul Phillips. He's the best. So I'm having him do it. But I just had to go through 3 hours of all kinds of choices. And you've got to be willing to do that. If you're going to get remarried, if you're going to prepare a new will, there's a certain cost to doing business. And you've got to spend the time and the resources to make sure you hire good professionals and put some thought into it. And that's another thing, too. What do you do, Pat, when people show up at your door and say, I'm getting remarried, Pat. Write me a prenup. Well, and they want you to write the prenup. Just like they want me to write the will or... whatever.
You know, obviously, and frankly, unless it's a few months before, I won't even do it because, you're right. You have to have some really good conversations. What do people want to do? Can they do what they want to do? Are they going to be overreaching? For example, if somebody comes in and says, well, I don't really want any more kids, and so if we have kids, she's going to have to support them or he's going to have to support them.
Well, if they're upfront about that and there's a legitimate factual basis for it,
but
that's one thing.
You can't do that. So you cannot have a premarital agreement.
I understand that in the prenatal context,
or for children.
Right.
And frankly, even if you have a contract that we won't have any children, if in fact the wife gets pregnant, even if it's by deception, pay. That's your child. You're going to have to support the child.
What about existing children, Pat? Can you sign a prenup that says, all right, you have 8 children. I don't want to be financially responsible for those children.
Well,
can you do that?
In New Jersey, a step-parent is not financially responsible for children.
Even without an agreement?
Even without an agreement.
Okay.
Now, of course, what the other side could argue is the parent...
custom and practice.
Actually, what they can argue is the parent with the 8 children... the other spouse can pay more towards their support so they can still,
So it's not, it's sort of indirectly doing it.
It could be indirect.
Yeah.
In
okay.
other words,
okay. It's a factor.
The fact is, let's assume that children are going to college and they can't go after the new spouse's income. However, there can be arguments, and I've certainly seen arguments that say, well, the spouse who's going to, whose children are going to go to college, they don't have the same housing expenses because they have a spouse who's helping them. So that unless the new spouse has actually done something, there are some cases where a woman remarries and her husband, her new husband, just makes it impossible for the children's father to see the children and says and makes a commitment to supporting the children. In those cases, that's a little different. But in the usual circumstances,
that would be an one would like to think an unusual and rare situation. You would hope a better situation for the family would exist.
But I think what you're saying and what you're telling us, and I never understand why people won't just get a recommendation for an attorney and at least talk to them, whether or not they go through with something. It's just like, and it's very unusual. in matrimonial cases anymore to need a private investigator. But I happen to have a case right now, and it has nothing to do with adultery or, you know, somebody running.
The usual sordid things.
But, in fact, there is really a need in this case to get information on a certain person. And, you know, as an attorney, I'm not going to be able to get that information. A private investigator will. So, of course, in that particular case, I recommended to my client to get a professional who can, in fact, provide the information or hopefully provide the information that he needs. But I never understand why people don't call attorneys until they get into trouble.
I think if you talk to other professionals, Pat, it sort of transcends what we do. People know they should be going for annual physicals and see the doctor. But how many people do you talk to who have obvious health concerns, and you say, gee, when was the last time you saw a doctor? And say, I'm healthy. I haven't been to a doctor in 20 years. But yet, perhaps they're, have a very bad health, you know, situation. Or a dentist. You hear this from, I hear this from dental clients all the time. They'll say, I get people come in, they have horrible teeth. I'll say, gee, you know, who was giving you dental care before? Who was your last? Oh, I haven't been a dentist in 30 years. And then people expect to come in and have that all taken care of. Well, maybe they can, maybe they can't, but they may have gone past the point where you can even fix some of these things. So why do people do that? I think it's just another one of those rules of life, which is that people tend to gravitate towards the things they like to do and that bring them pleasure and joy, and they gravitate away from the things that are hard to do and bring them, you know, not misery, but make life difficult. I mean, that's human nature.
Well, and also we've talked about this before and probably even on this program. One of the things that just amazes me are the number of clients who come in to see me who have children and do not have a will.
Yes, epidemic in this country.
And what we know as attorneys, I don't know, is it the whole country or is it pretty much I don't know.
No, they've done surveys. It's over 80%. What people don't realize, and I see it every day in my practice because I'm a probate estate planning attorney, so my phone rings every day with somebody, oh, my father died, my brother died, my spouse died. If you die without a will in New Jersey, whoever, even a spouse, must post an administrator's surety bond. I just did one the other day. I just sent it to the probate court yesterday. My client had to pay $4,995, $5,000 for the first year's premium on a surety bond in order to become appointed the executor. I mean, that's crazy. It doesn't cost $5,000 to have a will done. You can have the will done, right, and waive the posting of the bond in the will. It's one of the elementary things we do in a will. You appoint an executor to serve without bond. That one sentence would have saved this person $5,000.
And I know that in New Jersey, that's really easy. I happen to also practice in Florida, and I haven't done estate work down there. It was the only place I ever did estate work for when I was with a firm. But down there, I'll never forget the time that my client had to post a bond. His mother had a will. His mother named him the executor. She died in her late 90s, and even though she waived the bond, he still had to post a bond. This was her, like, 77-year-old son. So in New Jersey, of course.
Well, one of the reasons they may have had a post is in Florida, they have a lot of residency requirements. And if you are out of state and you qualify, I think you still have to be bonded,
well,
whereas in New Jersey you don't.
All I can tell you is Florida is a very interesting state to do.
Legal business in Florida is not as simple as people think. Probate is not as simple. There are taxes that might be paid down there. You know, Florida is not an answer for everything. A lot of people think, let me get out of New Jersey. You know, you've seen these articles recently. I can't afford to die in New Jersey and so forth. And it's true. Our estate tax is there, but it's not confiscatory. It's highest rate. It's only 10%. So, I mean, but the key, as you mentioned, as we wind this down, is planning. People have to talk to a professional ahead of time. I think to really any area of the law, but certainly in the family area and in the estate planning area, and to be honest, in the commercial area, if you're a business owner. Our esteemed colleague Bill Wolfson, bankruptcy attorney, has just entered the room. And Bill, not to put you on the spot as you're entering, you're coming in for the sports guy show, but, you know, wouldn't you recommend any business owner consult with you ahead of time before making any big commercial decisions regarding potential creditors and the financial soundness of the business?
Well, we always advise that because, remember, as bankruptcy practitioners, we're a little bit like the auto mechanics. We see when things have failed already. We've seen the underside of the beautiful car.
That's a great analogy, Bill.
And we see the oil leaks and the broken seals. And the
oil. Or you can change the oil filter before it becomes a problem.
Exactly. Let me give you the classic example. Somebody is looking to borrow money from a bank. The bank wants a personal guarantee by the individual. The individual's wife for the business. Sometimes you can negotiate a limited guarantee, meaning it's a guarantee only up to a certain amount, or it's only limited for the first 2 years of the loan.
Or perhaps only includes the business assets plus maybe some personal stuff, but excluding the family residence or that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can negotiate just about anything.
If they want to make the loan, it gives you an opportunity to negotiate that for the client.
And it's always best to do that beforehand. We just concluded a deal about 6 months ago with a strip center owner where they wanted a personal guarantee on the note, and we said, fine, we've been your customer for 15 years. We've got a good track record. We're fully leased up. We've given you a pledge of the rents. We think a personal guarantee is a little extreme here. Well, that's our policy, said the bank. I said, fine. We'll give you a personal guarantee for the first 3 years of a 15-year business loan. And in return for that, we want you to knock off a quarter point on the interest rate.
Boy, you got real tough with those people, Bill.
Well, and they did so.
Well, you know, one of the things, and it really is good, I happen to have I got a call today from a client who, you know, the issue was his wife has not signed the tax return, the joint tax return. So that was the issue, and I explained that we could do some indemnification, et cetera. The case really hasn't started. But I was amazed. I said, well, you know, how much do you think you're going to owe in taxes? I said, have you paid everything you owe? Did you pay it by April? And he said, no, I'm going to owe probably $80,000. I said, well, wait a minute. Did you pay that when you filed for your extension? He said, no. He said, my accountant said I don't have to do anything until October 15th.
Oh, boy.
So luckily, I was able to get on the phone with my client and his accountant. And, of course, the other thing that I told him, since his wife is balking at filing a joint return, at least when you pay that $80,000, you pay it under your name and your.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you. I know we're winding down the end of the show, but if you have a couple that they're still married, but let's say they're separated, or they're still together, but they know they're going to get a divorce,
right,
or they're and there's a huge tax liability. Do they just reach in a court, or can the husband send in the $80,000 and earmark it only to his social?
If he puts it under his, if he files that. Individually under his social, it goes to him. If he has, by any chance, if he files a joint and with a joint extension with both Social Security numbers, if they end up not filing a joint return,
yeah, that's
she
really
refuses,
the question.
She gets half the money. The
really?
IRS, the IRS will actually split estimated taxes if
well, that's a horrible rule.
I that's why they need someone like you or me, because all people need.
That's
to
right.
Do
they can solve that by an agreement.
Or they can solve it. In this case, if he pays estimated taxes on his under his name and his Social Security, he's given credit for it. If they don't file joint returns,
right, right.
So anyway,
right.
We are out of time. We'll be back right after the news.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
A decree from President Obama will affect school children all across the country. USA's Anthony Lucero has the story.
The Obama administration will order public schools across the country to allow transgender students to use the bathroom of their choice. The New York Times reports that the Justice Department and the Department of Education will send a letter to school districts today explaining that children who identify as transgender will be allowed to use the bathroom that matches their gender identity. The newspaper also says the letter contains an implicit threat that schools could lose funding if they don't comply. I'm Anthony Lucero.
Retail sales figures are a lot better than industry analysts expected. Figures out today from the Commerce Department show retail sales jumped 1.3% in April. That's nearly a 0.5% higher than experts were forecasting. This is USA Radio News.